step by step.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Patrick. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're going to start this meeting in a minute with our two-minute moment of silent meditation. So before we dim the lights and get into our meditation, if you guys could take your cell phones and all the other noise-making devices and put them to silent so they don't distract us during this portion of the meeting, we would really appreciate that. We take this actual two-minute moment of silent meditation so that we can get connected. We've all had busy days. We've gone our own ways, and now here we are. We're here to hear a message of strength, hope, and experience through the 12 steps, and we just ask God to remove the clutter and busyness in our minds so that we can help get connected and focused for this meeting. So with that, we're going to take 2 minutes and see you in a moment. Hope everybody feels a little bit more focused. If you'd like to join us in the pew in front of you, you have a little card. It's called a fog light prayer. It says, God, let your love shine through me like a fog light for those whom are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. And from there is a solution from the big book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution, that we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked my friend Nick to come up and read Spiritual Experience. It's written in the chapter, There's a Solution, and we feel that it's very important to understand what a spiritual experience is. The entire purpose of the 12 steps is to enable you to have a spiritual awakening, to connect with God and solve your problem. So please help me welcome introduce Nick.
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience.
The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, the conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With a few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our own experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essence of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thanks, Nick. Great job. And with that, we're going to get the meeting started. Before we do, we just ask the group, when a speaker's up here, we ask that you pay attention and possibly try to refrain from getting up, having side conversations, getting up, going to the bathroom, coming in, smoking cigarettes, coming back in and out. It disrupts the speaker and it disrupts those that are trying to pay attention to the message. And with that, I'm going to introduce Russell. I've been saying it over and over, week after week. I just feel honored, privileged, blessed that in South Florida we have speakers that can come here that we get to listen to that have such experience and time working these steps, and the relationship that Russell has built with God and carries that message to us is something that we're all fortunate for. With that, please help me welcome Russell.
Oh, boy. Old age, it's not for sissies. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. It's a blessing to be here. It really is. I'm really privileged to be able to do stuff like this. Wednesday night, I'm doing the step series over at the Sable Pond Group in Miami, and I get to hang around with recovering alcoholics and recovered alcoholics and people in recovery. And tonight I get to be with you guys, and tomorrow night I'll be with another group, and Sunday I'll be at my church, Saturday I'll be with another group of alcoholics. And you don't have to have a chip in your pocket to be my friend or me be able to hang out and maybe help people. It's just a blessing. And in my job, as a lawyer, I quite often see people, even in my work, who basically get to my office because they have problems that are consequences of either alcoholism or some sort of crazyism that has to do with the stuff that we're involved in here. So I'm constantly always getting to do this stuff, which is really a pleasure for me. It's a pleasure for me. You know, when it didn't, but did I say my name? I said my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic, right? Okay. I haven't found enough to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And it wasn't always like that. You know, I mean, a lot of the times when I first came here, I wasn't interested in this extracurricular activity. I wasn't interested in necessarily helping people. I was interested in, you know, what's in it for me, you know, feeling better. Over a period of time, that changes. And somebody was remarking to me, because so we drive about 50 miles to get here every Thursday. Today's Thursday, right? Every Thursday. And they said something like, you know, you do this every week. And I've been doing this for a long time, for years and years, coming up here for different groups, either maybe even farther, like the one-on-one club or stuff like that. And I said, well, you know, the book I read, it says that this is the kind of stuff we do. And it says if we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. It says God will give us everything we need, everything you need, if you stay close to Him and perform His work well. And I've found in the last 33, 34 years that the God that I have a relationship with has given me everything I need, plus. I'm a satisfied customer. And all I had to do was stay close to Him and perform His work well. And this is part of performing His work for me. This is my deal. This is what I like to do. To me, it's not even work. I think I told you guys once I was with some guy at a Denny's about 20 years ago. And I took him to his first meeting, and we were sitting there drinking coffee on a Saturday night. I don't know, it was like the Arch Creek Group or something like that up in North Miami. And he was in his 20s, and I don't know how old I was at that time, but about, I guess I was in my 30s. And he said to me how much he enjoyed the meeting, and he said, but what do you guys do for fun? And I didn't know how to tell him that I was having a good time. This was pretty much it for AA. This is like, hey, Valhalla helping out. You know, I was with a gal today in my office. She was brought to me by her parents. Very sweet gal. She reminded me of my daughter. I have three daughters. She's 23 years old, and she's on her second DUI at 23. Not that she has a drinking problem, you know. Maybe a problem with sleeping pills or amphetamines, but not drinking. You know, it's just wasn't her fault. But in any event, I had the pleasure of getting to talk to her and get to know her and talk to her parents. And so typical, you know, in a sense. And I don't say that in a derogatory way. I mean, for 34 years I've been dealing with young girls and young men in a similar situation with a similar sort of attitude. Tonight, so I linked her up since I know a lot of, you know, people obviously in recovery. And so tonight they have like a young person's meeting at the Prickle Circle group in Miami, where they're all between the ages, it's sort of like this deal, but maybe even a little younger, between the ages of like 18 and 30, that kind of thing. And there's a couple hundred of them that meet, and I contacted some people. And I had, supposedly, we'll see how this works, a couple of young gals picking her up. They're going to grab her and throw her in the back of the car. We'll see how that works. But, you know, I'm excited to learn how she, you know, I want to see. You know, hey, listen, you know, you can never tell. Maybe it'll be one of these deals that she doesn't make it, or she makes it, she doesn't like it. But I'm excited to not only be with you guys, I'm excited to see how this thing works out for her. It's an exciting thing to see people's lives change, see people who are not doing real well. You know, she wasn't doing real well. It's exciting to see people who completely go from living a life of quiet desperation at 23 years old. At 23 years old, it's like a sad deal. And, you know, she's not having fun. To all of a sudden having a whole new deal open up for her, because you guys know what it's like to be out there. You understand, when you're out there, you don't know anything about this stuff. You have no idea this stuff even exists. You don't even believe that there are people that actually don't drink. And you know, I mean, and certainly you don't want to hang around them. You know, it's like one of these deals. When you're out there, you know that there's no way you could ever have any fun if you don't hang out with the people you're hanging out with. And so it's such a, it's a, I only wish, quite frankly, I could have somehow been here and there to see her face when she walks in and sees 200 girls and guys her age having a good time. You know, I wish I could be there. You know, that's an exciting deal that we get to experience, you know, in this thing. So it's really good to be here. And I like talking about stuff that I think that you don't hear that much in rooms. I don't know whether it's true or not. I've been told that you don't hear that much. I'm going to read a couple of things to y'all, and we're somewhere around the 6 or 7 step, but it, you know, it doesn't really matter. Don't worry about that stuff. It's not going to matter. You're going to get whatever you're going to get out of it. So in vision for you, I want to read you something here. This is on page 151. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, it doesn't say whether this is a new person or an old person, just says he's a serious drinker and he's dry at the moment. This could be a guy with 30 years. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better. I work better. I'm having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He isn't happy about his sobriety. You know, so what do you do? What do you do when sobriety is not enough? I mean, what do you do when you're going to meetings and you're working the steps and you're doing this deal and you're going to meetings after meetings? And what do you do when you're physically sober and it's not enough, and you're not happy, and you're not filled with joy, and you're not being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which you had not even dreamed? You're not experiencing much of heaven. You don't have all sorts of remarkable things happening to you. What do you do when that's the deal? When life is just one difficult flipping thing right after the other? What about, you know, how do you handle, you know? I had a guy call me up. I didn't call me up. He texted me. I love the age we're living in. You know, guys I sponsor that move up to New Jersey, you know, instantaneously they text me and they ask me a question. I mean, it's just kind of neat. So he wanted to know why, now that he's making money, this is the guy he sent me a picture with his, like, Instagram things, and one of these pictures with $1,000 bills in his hand. And he said, God is great. He's got about 8 months or something. He had them all fanned out, you know what I mean? Like a fan, $1,000 bills. He wasn't doing too well here. I've suggested this over the years. I've watched alcoholics and how they do things. And I'm not saying I know everything. I don't. And I may be wrong about a lot of things. I'm willing to agree to that. But I've always been of the opinion that if you're in South Florida and you're an alcoholic, it's a mistake to move to the Northeast during winter time. I don't know. I'm just telling you. I don't know why. I've always felt, you know, I get these guys, and they're not having a good time down here, and they say, I've got to get back to Wisconsin in November. You know what I mean? And there's something inside of me that just tells me that's very alcoholic. You know what I mean? I say, no, they all want to be down here. You know, no, you don't understand. I got to get back up there. So I've always had predilection to believe that if you're an alcoholic and you're not feeling well in Miami, the answer is probably not to move back to Michigan in December. You understand what I'm saying? That's probably not going to be the answer. Because at least if you're not doing well down here, you're not doing well underneath palm trees. You know what I mean? You're not doing well up there. It's not doing well, you know, in snowdrifts. You know, it's a bit different deal. So he's up there now, and he said, of course, I'm not breaking his anonymity because you don't know his name or anything, but he'll hear this, he'll laugh at this, you know, because, but, so he's got this fan of these $100 bills, and he sends it to me. He says, God is great, because he knows he's got to, if he's going to send a fan with $100 bills down to me, he better say God is great underneath it. You know, that's sort of like, he's like buying me off, you know what I mean? So he won't get hurt. And because he mentioned God, you know, so because I'm not into that other stuff. But in any event, so he said, God is great. So then he said to me, how come I don't feel well? That's what he said. He said he had the $100, you know, he used to be whining and crying about the money, and now he's got the money. He says, how come I still don't feel well? And so I wrote him back. Do you know why he doesn't feel well? Do you know why he doesn't feel well? I know why he doesn't feel well. So I wrote him back. I said, because you're selfish. That's why he doesn't feel well. It's simple. Because he's selfish. That's why none of us feel well. That's the problem. You read that? Because, you know, I'm a big book devotee. I've decided, after 34 years of doing this thing and road testing this thing, I've decided the more I hit this thing, the more I test it, the more I discover that they're right. They're just right, you know. It's just the truth, you know. I mean, we read this stuff, but it takes time. It may take 5, 10, 15, 20 years to get rid of old ideas. I mean, we read it, we talk about it in groups, we sort of nod our heads, but somewhere in the back of my minds, we know, you know, it's true for most people. A lot of it is true for us, but not all of it. It's not always the case, you know. That's why we say things that you don't understand. We know we're exceptions. You work your program, I work my program. But to buy into this entire deal in all its entirety, the God either there is or he isn't, and the whole thing's about it. I mean, you know, we know that it's all about God. It's not about money. Money's not that important. It's just right up there with oxygen. You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, we give it lip service. When push comes to shove, we talk about God and we talk about being spiritual and not religious and all the stuff we talk about. But most of the time, most of our thought life is about knowing that if we only had $1 million, we'd be okay. If I only had $1 million, a good-looking blonde, and a nice car, and a good job, everything would be wonderful. I know it's all about God, but give me the money, and then I'll, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of hard to really buy into all this crap. You know what I mean? But the book says our real problem is that we're selfish and self-centered, and we're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. We find we've made decisions based upon self, which puts us in a position to be hurt. It says above everything, we must get rid of our selfishness. This is in my opinion. You know, this is in my opinion. I am like quoting from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, lest you think, boy, I like the way that guy sounds. You know, where does he get this stuff? This is the big book. I'm just quoting for it. I've read it so many times. I've studied it. I'm just quoting from it, you know. You know, selfishness, self-centeredness. It says above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It kills us. There's all sorts of symptoms of alcoholism. Drinking is but a symptom. Drinking is just something we do to not feel how we feel when we're selfish. There's other symptoms all throughout the book, you know. I mean, there's a symptom of the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, have the power to kill. I mean, you know, we're just affected by other people and their actions real bad. Whether they're actually doing, even if they're not doing anything, we just sort of like think they're doing stuff. We think up crap, you know, which it's clear to us that they're, you know, we take things personally. We're sensitive. Or as my sponsor used to say, he said, you know, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. It's just when you're selfish and you're self-centered and you're always thinking about yourself, what comes out of that is just a horrible life. It's just always feeling disconnected, never feeling connected, always needing something, never quite being there no matter what. It's just being restless. It's being irritable. It's being discontented. It's being whatever. It's just a bad deal. So, I mean, I don't have to figure this thing out. I don't have to go to the doctor. I don't have to go to the psychiatrist. I don't have to do any of that stuff. He's got a lot of money. You know, he's up in New Jersey where he thinks that's where he needs to be. And it's still not working. And so he says, what's the problem? I said, you're selfish. You know, it's not the drinking, right? He's not drinking. He's not drugging. It's not the drink. He's selfish. It's pretty simple, straightforward. So then he says, how do I get rid of the selfishness? So how does he get rid of the selfishness? You know how he gets rid of, you want to know how he got rid of the selfish, how he gets rid of the selfishness. Because you got to get rid of the selfishness. You must, or it what? Kills you. So how, if you happen to be in that position, I'm not saying you guys are, because I can tell you're like cut above, but if you were in the position where you're going to AA and it's just not enough, you know? It's just not enough. I mean, it's okay. I mean, you're not putting it down, but I mean, you just need a little bit. You need something else. You need something more. It's just not working. It's not working fast enough for you, okay? You just need more. So, you know, how would you get, if I'm right, if your real problem is selfishness, even if you don't think so, because most of us don't think it's selfishness, we forget something else. That's what the big book says. It says we're self-willed, we're in riot, though we usually don't think so. So if that was the truth, what I'm telling you is we must get rid of this selfishness. We must start to... So how he asked the question. This is a question you might ask. He said, you might come up after me at the meeting and says, let me ask you a question. I don't know. I'm working this thing hard. I don't know. I don't know how to get rid of this selfishness. How can I get rid of it? So what's the answer to that? You guys, what's the answer to that? Well, the answer is simple. You can't. That's the answer. You got a lot of people out there trying to get better, but you can't get better. It's impossible for you to get better. You can't get better. That's the problem. The problem is most people think they can get better, and they absolutely cannot get better. It's a sad, sad thing when you got millions of people out there trying through self-help and trying through everything in the world to get weller. And they get a little wellness. They get a little better. They get a little better, but it's never quite good enough. They never escape the gravitational pull of alcoholism. It's always something there to sort of pull them back. They never experience that heaven. They never experience it rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. They rarely experience that. Every once in a while, they hit a promise or two. It lasts for an hour or 2 hours, maybe a day or something. Then they're back to the same old grind, no matter how hard, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. They never experience that thing. You know, they say in the book, you know, in the 12 and 12, it says, they talk about the steps that separate the men from the boys. You know, what do you think? What do you figure that? If you're an AA, y'all are an AA, so. Part of being an AA is you buy into the program. You buy into that stuff, you know? So, I mean, part of it, even though we are alcoholics, so our chief characteristic is defiance, somewhere along the line, you sort of just give up the ghost and you say, okay, I'm going to buy into this crap. You know, I mean, it sounds good. So you're going to buy into the stuff that there's a point where you actually, even though you're physically sober, there's a point that even though you're physically sober, there's a point where there's a separation, where there's some guys and gals that sort of leave the pack behind. That there's this large, it's not like a 50-50 thing, you know that. It's not like out of 1,000 alcoholics, 500 are the men and 500 are the boys. It's like, you know, you got 990 men and girls, I mean girls and boys, and then you got like 10 that, you know, I mean it's like a rare thing. Many are called, few are chosen. It's that there are some people that get something more than physical sobriety. They just do. So what is it? You know, what are they doing? What are they doing? I mean, that's what I want to know. I met because you meet them. I met them. Now, some people don't even meet them, don't even see them. It is possible to be an A and not even see them because, you know, how would you, you know, some I was, you know, there are some people that are out in the parking lot smoking. And they won't meet them because those the people that have separated out are in the A room. You know what I mean? Doing AA things, but they're out in the parking lot smoking. So how are they going to meet them? You know what I mean? And there's some people, but every once in a while, if I think if you hang around AA long enough, you sort of meet people. It's like if you're a golfer, you're out there at Doral hacking around with all the other hackers and you're golfing, and all of a sudden Tiger Woods shows up. He hits a few balls, and you know, I mean, you're a golfer and everybody else is a golfer, but you know, he's like a different, he's whatever you would call him, he's something, he's a professional. He's at a different level. There's some guys doing this, so you run into them. Like I ran into Al Grau. I ran into Al Kennedy. This isn't like every day. You run into these guys once in a blue moon. You know, guys that are dying of terminal cancer and they're helping other people and they're feeling good about themselves and life is wonderful and they just got something going. There's something going on there that I don't understand. So, you know, here's what my deal is. I'm going to these meetings. I'm going to these step meetings because I want to find out because it's a mystery to me. I mean, I'm working these steps hard. I'm doing all this stuff. I want to find out how they got their deal. And, I mean, I've gone to school. I did well in school. Then I went to college. Then I went to postgraduate work. I worked hard and I studied hard. So I am absolutely locked into the understanding that if I work hard enough and I understand it enough, you know what I mean, that I can somehow do, you know, self, I can do this deal. You know what I mean? I can somehow, just like the guy who saw Dr. Young, who was at Roland Hazard, now knowing the inner work, for a year he works with Dr. Young, now knowing the inner workings of his mind, he was convinced that he would never drink again. Nevertheless, within a few weeks he was drunk. He went back to the ICE, says, what's the deal? He says, I've never been, I can't tell you, I've never been successful with an alcoholic. You're a chronic alcoholic. You have the mind of a chronic. I've never been successful with a person of your mentality. You know, here and there, once in a while, something happens. They change their ideas, attitudes, you know, emotions, you know, are suddenly that guide their life or cast to one side and they become dominated by a whole new set of emotions. He says, they're miracles. They're like, they're phenomena. We can't even understand it. I can't replicate it. And it's like here and there once in a while, once in a blue moon. So how do you do that? So I know, I wish I could tell you. So we say things that aren't necessarily bad. They're good things like we say like, well, don't drink and go to meetings. Nothing wrong with saying don't drink and go to meetings because we got no other answer. You know, get a sponsor. Nothing wrong with getting a sponsor. We say, work the steps. Nothing wrong with working the steps. We say all this stuff to everybody that comes in here. Yet, even though we say that, and even though we do that, and we tell people to do it, yet there's still only a small, small few that are separated out. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter, you know? You know what they say, I have a sign in my office, the truth, you can't handle the truth. It's true. So what do I mean when I say, so I say to them, I say, you can't. And the reason you can't is because you're powerless, because I'm powerless. Isn't that what the big book says? Is what it says in chapter to the agnostic? I think what it says if a mere code of ethics or a better philosophy of life or being smarter or cuter or thinner or whatever worked for us, we would have been well a long time ago. But such codes, such philosophies didn't work for us. Lack of power. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power greater than ourselves which would solve our problem. And that's why we wrote a book that's spiritual. Spiritual. And that's why we're going to have to talk about God. Isn't that what it says in that chapter of the agnostics? And what it says, to the agnostics or the non-believers, it says you got to get over it. This sort of thinking has to be abandoned. And it even says, if you're an alcoholic, you're not going to like this. The way they say it is they say the hackles of your neck stand up. In other words, like if somebody's talking about it, you're like pissed. Let me tell you how bad it is. It's this bad that if you're an alcoholic, and you go to a meeting, and all of a sudden somebody brings up God, and you don't even know why you're doing this, somehow deep down inside of you, you say, this guy's full of shit, and you get mad. That's why they go through that stuff when we first started this thing where it says contempt prior to investigation. Because it's knowing that the solution in here, the only solution, the real solution, is something that alcoholics won't buy. Forget about the not drinking thing. They'll actually buy the not drink. Most people in here will buy the not drinking forever thing one day at a time before they'll buy the God thing. As a matter of fact, as soon as they get the not drinking for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, they say, I've got it. Now I don't have to do the God thing. In other words, what they do is they say, well, this is about not drinking. Isn't that what some of these old crotchety old-timers say? They say, it's just about putting the plug in the jug. Just don't drink if your ass falls off. And I say, well, you can do that. There's a lot of guys that do that. There's a lot of guys walking around to AA who've got 10, 15, 20 years that are miserable sons of a bitches. You know what I mean? They're just miserable. They're just miserable. They're talking about people behind their back, you know, and saying bad things about other people behind their back. They're mad, but, you know, they're picking up their 20-year medallion. You know, but what about what about that deal they're talking about in the big book? That Dr. Bob was talking about, if you're an atheist, agnostic, of any other form of intellectual pride that keeps you from this deal, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. What about this guy in, I like this guy. I like the way he puts it. I always like to read this part. It says, this latest part, this is in the chapter, he sold himself short. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. For once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my 8 years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. What about that guy? Why can't I be like that guy? Not worried about stuff, not worried about things, just excited and joyous to have a relationship with God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap so I can help other people. What about, how do you get that deal? When you're running around, well, you know, I guess that must be what they're talking about when they say in this part right here, that's what they're talking about, I guess, when they say when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. What about the remarkable things? We had an old employer being all-powerful. He pleaded what he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. What about the man? How do you get close to him and perform his work well? And just focus on his work. Just focus. Well, how do you make God the central factor of your life? Isn't that what it says? I think it says someone in here. I think it says, oh, here it is. It says the great fact is this and nothing less. Which I take to mean that the great fact is this and nothing less. Nothing less than this. The central factor of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into a heart, I guess it could be a doorknob if you were created by a doorknob. The absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. Later on it says, see to it your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Right here it says, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans, and designs. You ever find yourself thinking about yourself? No, you ever find yourself during the day thinking about yourself? Thinking about, you know, what's going to happen to you, what's happening to you, what's happening to you right now, how you're doing, how you're not doing, comparing yourself to other people, thinking about what's going to happen. You ever find that your thought life tends to go about thinking about yourself and a lot? You ever not think about yourself? You ever get the feeling that when you think about yourself, you really don't feel that good? You ever drive around thinking, you ever think about how you're lonely, how you're disconnected, how you really, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much is going on in your life, what you're doing, that basically you're sort of lonely and disconnected and empty? You ever think about how empty you are and how lonely and disconnected you are? Driving in a car. How about at night when you're in bed, 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock? The bottom line is, no matter what's going on, no matter how much you surround yourself with people, you could have a romantic relationship to divert yourself, the worldly clamors and everything like that. But when it comes right down to it, it never quite really gets rid of the fact that you're all alone and nobody cares about you but you. That's not a really good feeling, is it? It's a crummy feeling. So how are you going to get rid of that? It's like the guy says, how am I going to get rid of this selfishness? You can't. You can't. It's not the drinking or not drinking. I mean, you drank to get rid. You drank so you wouldn't feel lonely. You drank so you could connect. You drank, it worked for a while. There's a lot of things that worked for a while but didn't work permanently. It was like a false type of thing. Now you're not drinking. You still got that problem. How are you going to connect again? Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. By the way, that's alcoholism. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, is all that stuff happening to you? We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter we were reborn. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. So how do you get that? He can't. My friend can't do it. I couldn't do it. I tried to do it. I tried to do it. I can't do it. It's all about surrender. It's bad enough I had to surrender the booze. Look how much you got to surrender. You got to surrender the booze. You got to surrender the hate. You got to surrender the resentments. You got to surrender everything. How do you surrender everything? How do you give it all up to Him? When you're sitting in a room, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, where they don't even like talking about Him. How do you surrender? So you go to Alcoholics Anonymous and you almost feel funny about talking about Him, even though you suspect that's the answer because you know people don't like it. And another problem you have is you worry about what other people think about you. So you sort of go along with the wisdom of the rooms, which seems to be we're spiritual, not religious, don't talk about God, just refer to higher power, good orderly direction, try to water that shit down, forget all this make-believe stuff, God, the Bible, and all that sort of stuff. So we try to substitute in good orderly direction. Now, I know if you're a good orderly direction guy, this may piss you off, but you'll get over it. You know what I mean? Remember, whenever you're disturbed, what the cause, there's something wrong with you. But so we say, well, it's good orderly direction. That's like God. You get it? Good orderly direction. G-O-D. That's like God. So what is good orderly direction? You know what good orderly direction is? It's the absolute opposite of AA. You know how I know it's the opposite of AA? Because Alcoholics Anonymous says the big book was written to deists. It's about there is a God. He either is or he isn't. Good orderly direction is a... Now, is it bad to have good orderly direction? No. Is it bad to do the right things? No. As a matter of fact, if you focus on Him, you'll probably end up doing it more likely than not. But you know what good orderly direction is? It's a mere philosophy. It's a better philosophy of life. You know what it says in the big book? It says in the big book, in the chapter of Gnostics, it's a mere philosophy of life or a better philosophy of life, we would have been... but that's something we make up that sounds good so that we don't have to believe in God. So we come in here, we listen to the wisdom of the rooms, and we water it down just a little nugget so we don't have to do this thing and people won't laugh at us and we can stay cool. Not like those idiots that believe in God. And some, but it's okay. You know, you could do that for 10, 15 years and stay sober and never really realize the potential that you could have in here if you just focused on him and did what they told you to do, see what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass and you come to us. By the way, who's the one who decides what's the good orderly direction? Who's the one who decides what's the orderly direction you're supposed to take? Oh, that would be you. But I think in the big book it says, first of all, we had to quit playing God. It says he is our director. He's the guy. That's the arch that we have to walk through. So you see, you just when you're doing this deal, you just can't get away from him. So what does that have to do with anything? Well, here's the problem that I found. And I think I might have read this before, but I'm going to read it now again now. Problem is, it says, I hope I'll be able to get through this deal, but we'll see. This is written by Bill Wilson. The problem is when I'm selfish. I'm selfish. I know I'm selfish because I'm an alcoholic. Now, let me tell you something. We don't have the corner on this. You know, I've been out there. I've been all over the place with human beings. It's like a human quality. You know, we are selfish to the extreme, but there's a lot of people selfish to the extreme that don't have a drinking problem. You know what I mean? You got to feel real sorry for them sons of guns because they don't even have meetings to go to. You know what I mean? It's like they're just miserable. They're just living lives of quiet desperation. But my selfishness is such that if I feel bad enough, long enough, it's like it says, Carl Menninger said in his book, he says alcoholics are out to destroy themselves. Somehow, some way, over any period of time, I'm committing suicide, I'm hurting people, I'm doing crazy crap, you know? I'm going to just somehow engineer my demise. I'm going to be, we have politicians and movie stars that get themselves in the most horrendous jams doing crazy things. Smart guys, stupid things. And the whole world is shaking their head saying, how could they get involved? How could they do this? It never puzzles me. I get it. I know why a president of the United States can get in trouble fooling around with an intern, and I know why they do insane things. I get it, because I'm an alcoholic. My entire life is hanging out with people that do stupid, insane things, that are intelligent, and say things like, you don't understand, you know what I mean? I haven't had a drink, but they still do crazy. I know what it is to completely engineer your demise and do that. I get that deal. But when you're selfish and you're self-centered, you think insanely. You can't do good orderly direction because somehow along the way it breaks down. Here's the deal. Here's the problem. It's actually right out of the Bible. It's all in AA. You know, in the Bible it says you can't serve. By the way, I don't know if you know this. A takes a stand on the God thing. It says there's a thing called the third step where you guys heard about the third step. We're not necessarily on the third step, but I'm going to assume that you guys know about the third step. It's there. It says we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. So you got to turn your will over to God, right? And then your lives over to God, right? And then, well, what's left after your will and your life? Pretty much that's it. That's pretty much it. You turn your will and your life over to him, right? Now, you made a decision to do that, but listen, here's the problem. You guys have probably all done that, or you're about to do that. I did it. Here's the problem. You can make a decision to turn your will over your life over to care of God, but not actually do it. Do you understand what I just said? In other words, you can get down on your knees, and you can say the prayer, and you can really want to do it, and make a decision to do it, and that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Let's call it it's like training wheels. It's like practice. You know what I mean? You throw in the towel, you know what I mean? You just throw in the towel. And then you get up and you grab the thing back again, and then you spend the next 10 years ripping off strips, you know, hoping that'll satisfy, you know? You know, it takes a while to really turn your will. I mean, you're going to turn your will over, and you're turning your will and your life over to the care of God, except your sex life. You know, you're going to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, you know, except the money thing. You know, you're going to turn it all over to God. And the truth is, in Alcoholics Anonymous, the way we start, it's out of the book of James. I read the book. There's a great line in the book of James that says, rejoice when you have trials and tribulations. Because when you suffer trials and tribulations over a period of time and you persevere, by not drinking, drugging, but you focus on God. It says it'll make your faith stronger. It'll make you closer to God, and you'll be better suited. That's how we grow. We grow in here through trials and tribulations, which is interesting because we hate that shit. You know, we don't see. We go to discussion meetings complaining about the trials and tribulations, not realizing if we didn't have the trials and tribulations, we'd be drunk and crazy. Because what happens is that's how we get a new perspective. By a thousand forms of humiliation, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Most people would say, after coming to AA, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to them. It saved their lives. They almost don't remember how horrible it was before they came here. They don't remember that in order to get here, they had to get horrible. They almost don't remember that the ticket, the ante in the poker game, the thing that allowed them to get in here is they had to destroy their life and get to the worst time in their life and get totally humiliated. That's what you had to get in order to get here. So it shouldn't be of any surprise to you that the way we get closer and closer to God is by going through the same thing over and over and over again for 20, 30 years. You know, so, you know, every time it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're sucking your thumb and you think your life is over and you think this is a pride thing that's killing you and you don't know what to do and you don't drink and you pray and everything like that, that's good shit. That's how this thing works. And you grow up a little bit more and a little bit more. You do it for about 30 years, you know. You do it for 20 years, 30 years. You get, you know, over and over. It's not like a one-shot deal. It's over and over and over again. So it says right here, so the bottom line is, and it says you can't serve God, you can't do the third, you can't turn your will and your life over to the care of God. It's the old God and mammon thing. It's right out of the Bible. It's all through the Bible. It's all about Him. You know, in AA, it's all about Him. That's why we have this 11th step. After you do all this stuff, have you noticed after you do all this stuff, you get on the 11th step? You see what the 11th step says? Now that you have a spiritual relationship with God, you have a relationship with God, now you try to improve it. You see anything there that has anything to do with money? You know, or sex. You see anything about sex in there? You see anything about money in there? You see, it's all about God, isn't it? All they write about is a God. Yeah, have you ever noticed it's all about God in there and improving your relationship with God? I don't see anything about whether or not you're having a romantic relationship or what your boyfriend's doing or what your girlfriend's doing. It's all about God. And then you go out and you talk about that deal. And what does it say your job is now? To be of maximum service to God and other people. You know? Is that what you talk about all the time in AA, or do you go to AA meetings and talk about your relationships and talk about your money and talk about your job and talk about selfish and self-centered things? I'm not putting it down. I did the same things. You know, that's what we do. That's what we do. So it's either you can't turn your will and your life over to the care of God and at the same time turn your will and your life over to the care of your boss, or turn your will and your life over to the care of your wife or your husband or your boyfriend or girlfriend. You can't turn your will and your life over to the care of God and at the same time schizophrenically say, well, my will and life will be turned over to the care of the government. You know, you got to make a choice. It's either one or the other. If you're going backwards and forwards, you're going to be texting your sponsor saying, what's wrong with me? How do I get out of this deal? I mean, how you get out of it, above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. You know, the answer says God makes that possible. Money doesn't make it possible. Sex doesn't make it possible. God makes that possible. The forgotten mountain. So here's what happens. This is what happens to Bill Wilson. This is what happens to us. When I was a child, I acquired some of the traits that had a lot to do with my insatiable craving for alcohol. I was brought up in a little town of Vermont under the shadow of Mount Aeolus. An early recollection is that of looking up at this vast and mysterious mountain, wondering what it meant and whether I could ever climb that high. But I was presently distracted by my aunt, who as a fourth birthday present made me a plate of fudge. For the next 35 years, I pursued the fudge of life and quite forgot about the mountain. So what's your fudge? What's the central fact in your life? What's the fudge in your life? Bill Wilson says he found God, but then it was blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly with world. I know what worldly clamors are. It's that blonde in the front row. I know what the worldly clamors are. It's the job. It's the money. How do you survive this world? I know what worldly clamors are. When a guy sends me a text message with a fan of $1,000 and says, God is great, I know I'm talking to a dead man. I know I'm talking to a guy that's, you know, because you know something? You know what God's going to do to him? He's going to take away the $1,000. Next month, that fist is going to be empty. God is not going to be great. He's going to have to learn that God is great, whether he's got $1,000, $1,000,000, or whether he's got nothing. God is just great just because he's great, not because he feels he's great because he's given him something. You know what that is? That is, God is great as long as he's getting everything. You know what that is? That's selfish. That's self-centered. That's what alcoholics do. They think in these terms, how am I doing? That's what we do. That's how you can tell what the deal is. If you're an alcoholic, your main thinking is this. It goes like this. It goes, this is what you ask yourself all the time. You don't realize it, but you ask yourself this all the time. You say, what's wrong with me? Why do I feel this way? What's wrong with me? Why do I feel, how can I feel better? And then you say this. You say, I need something. What do I need? You say, I need something. You say, and then you decide what you need. You need, I need a car. I need a girlfriend. I need more sex. I need people to look up at me. I need a job. You start thinking about what you need. And it becomes very clear to you that if you only lived in New Jersey, if you only had $1,000, if you only had a girlfriend, if you only had this, you'd be okay. And then you chase after that deal. Because it's clear to you that's what you need. That's what the deal is. You chase after that deal. And you may get that deal. And you feel good. Just like the alcohol made you feel good, or the drugs made you feel good. You get that deal, and you feel good for a few hours. And then all of a sudden, you're empty again. And then you say to yourself, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What do I need? And then you think about, well, yeah, you know, I got that job. If I only had a better job, if I only had a better gal, if I only had a better... And you're constantly chasing all over the planet for that thing that's going to make you better, and you never feel better, and you don't know why. No, because the bottom line is, it's not about the stuff. And somehow, some way, what I've found in my life is over a period, what I realize is that for... Now, here's the bad news or the good news. You can take it any way you want to take it. I'm just going to tell you the truth as I see it. This is just my experience, you know. And I'm just telling you the way it is. And it's not. I don't think it's bad news. It's just the way it is. This is not the type of thing. This isn't like instant coffee. This isn't like you come in here, you pick up a white chip, you get on your knees, say, God help me, and all of a sudden you're acting like you got 30 years. And you've been. This is like going into the Marine Corps and going through boot camp. You know, I mean, one of the reasons people admire Marines, I got a lot of friends who are Marines, former Marines, is because they've gone through the process of becoming a Marine. The process of becoming a Marine means you got to go to the boot camp. And boot camp is rough as crap. And some people don't survive it. But if you survive it and you get out the other end, you are a Marine. You will always be a Marine. Okay, but you got to go through the crap. Well, AA has its boot camp. You know, just like when the Israelites came out of Egypt and they had to do 40 years in the desert before they got into the promised land, we have our boot camp. And our boot camp, now, of course, we're alcoholics. You know, all alcoholics want to be better like that. This is what you want because that's how scotch works. That's how scotch works. That's how beer works. That's how getting drunk works, like that. So that's what you want. You want the answer, the bottom line. You want to be fed that stuff so you'll feel better forever like that. And the way AA works is that you go through this process that takes, you know, to get rid of all these old ideas, to get rid of not worrying about, how do you get rid of not worrying about, you know how you learn how to stay sober and feel decent about yourself and have great joy even when you're bored? You know how you learn how to stay, when you're bored as shit, you know how you learn how to stay sober and still feel good when you're bored? You've got to be bored for about 10 years. You got to just be bored. You know how you learn how to stay sober and make the best of it and still have a good time and still feel good about yourself when you're broke? You got to be broke. You got to be broke about 1,000 times over a period of 10 years, worrying about where you're going to live, not drink, and go up to your sponsor, and he says, why don't you go help that guy? And when you do it about 1,000 times, one day you'll wake up and say, you want something? I'm not going to die. I'm not going to be killed. Maybe this is what God wants me to do. And all of a sudden it will come upon you that having money isn't the most important thing in the world. The most important thing is helping that guy. And the next thing you know, you won't worry about money anymore. You won't worry about being bored anymore. You know how you learn how to feel good about yourself and feel like you're in a right relationship with God, even though you don't have a romantic relationship going on? Listen, I don't know about you, but when I was out there drinking, if it was a Saturday night and I didn't have a date or I didn't have a gal, I mean, why don't I just blow my brains out? I mean, really, because, you know, I mean, you feel like it's the end of the world. That's an immature, when you think, you know what Bill Wilson said when he talked about emotional sobriety? The Next Frontier, he says, the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. The gal who was in my office today, she's 23 years old. Ever since she's 17, she says, I can't sleep. She takes sleeping pills every night for 6 years. I tried to point out to her, maybe successfully, that whenever you use a substance to allow you to do anything, you lose the ability to do that same thing without the substance. And you become dependent upon the substance, and that's chemical dependency. Well, whenever you have to have a romantic relationship to feel like you're worthwhile, to feel like you're a worthwhile human being and not a piece of crap, because when you have a romantic relationship, it makes you feel good. You understand? So you need to have one. Whenever you need to have that in order to be worthwhile, you lose the ability to feel worthwhile and like a whole human being alone. You know, you can become dependent upon a lot of stuff. You can become overly dependent upon money. You can become dependent upon people. Let me tell you something. If you're an alcoholic, you don't need alcohol to be drunk. You can be drunk on self-pity. You can be drunk on things. Women can be drunk on men. You can be drunk on a lot of stuff and go through a lot of withdrawals when you're an alcoholic. The only difference is they don't pull you off the side of the road and say, get out of the car. I happen to notice that you're feeling sorry for yourself. They arrest you for the booze, but believe me, after the booze is just the tip of the iceberg. But how do we get, really, when your whole life is about being dependent on people, places, and things, on the worldly clamors, when it's the most natural thing in the world to wake up in the morning and say, I need this, there's something wrong, I need that, I need a new dress, I need a new blouse, I need to lose 50 pounds, all the vanity stuff, when it's the most natural thing in the world, because let's face it, the world is telling you, you need all that stuff. You turn on TV, it's selling you that, because that's how they make money. When it's the most natural thing in the world to think that all the time, okay? How do you get rid of that? Listen, you're going to walk out of here and you're going to get in your car and you're going to drive away, and somewhere along the way, it's going to come up. You're going to start thinking, I need this, I need that. And I've sort of screwed you now, right? You see? But it's a good way, because now when it happens, you'll say, holy shit, this is what Russell was talking about. I am doing it all the time. You won't feel right. You won't feel good. You'll feel sorry for yourself. You'll be getting all squirrely. And all of a sudden, you'll start thinking about money. You'll start thinking about women. You'll start thinking about men. You'll start thinking about clothes. You'll start thinking about all that stuff. And you'll say, man, how do you get rid of this thing? This thing is killing me. My thought life. How do I stop this deal? God makes that possible. You know, but I wish I could tell you, wouldn't it be great if you just go to one meeting like this, you hear somebody say, well, that guy sort of makes sense. And you say, I'm going to do this, and that's it? You were cooked? Wouldn't that be great if you could, let's say there's a guy there who says, you know, shit, he's right. He's right. That's the answer. I got to stop thinking that way. I got to think about God. I got to give my life over to God. Who cares about that stuff? That's right. And you walk out, and you're cooked. Right? But that's not the way it works. Even if you agree with me, even if you're nodding your head and you're saying that's right, you walk out, and then 5 minutes later, you're thinking about the crap again. Because it's like being right-handed. It's like chronic. It's like inside of you. You know? You didn't give up drinking in one day. You know, I mean, it's like that's the way it is. You got to go through, because when you don't give this stuff up right away and you continue to do it, right? Selfish is self-driven by 100 forms. You're driven. by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. You're driven. You're driven to do this. You're driven to do that. You know, when the bottom line is what happens is you got to suffer over a period of time what happens with living your life while you're doing this stuff and somehow recognizing it. And what will happen is after you get burnt about 500 or 1,000 times over a period of 10 years or 15 years, all of a sudden one day you'll wake up just like it was with the alcohol and you'll lose the obsession to worry so much about what other people think about you. You'll be 15, 20 years sober, and all of a sudden you'll be talking differently, you'll be acting differently, and you'll find you won't be thinking so much about people, places, and things, or what they think about you, and you'll feel free. And some guy you're sponsoring who has, you know, 6 months says, well, how do you do that? And you won't even know what to say to him. He'll want to know the answer. So how did you do that? You got, because he wants what you have. You've worked it for 20 years, you know, trying to figure this thing out and trying to work this thing, you know, and hard. And you had to go through all the pain and all the agony and all the crap. And finally, because you persevered, now all of a sudden your faith has grown to the point where you're focusing on him. You're thinking about him all the time. You're not worried about that stuff. And some guy with 6 months and 1 year will say, well, how can I do it? And you don't have the heart to tell him. You don't have the heart to say to him, you know, when he says, what do you do for fun? You don't have the heart to say to him, I'm having a good time. Because he wouldn't understand what you're talking about because he hasn't been through the deal. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not only working the steps, it's working the steps out there. You know, it's, you know, being road tested, being hammered, going through the trials, going through being broke, going through not having a relationship, going through the problems, the stuff that you think is all bad crap. You know, it says in our book, it says the suffering is, it says the suffering, we learn the value of suffering. Man, I'll tell you, that's what we don't tell newcomers that. There may be some of the newcomers. You know, you don't say that to newcomers. He says, oh, you're going to learn the value of suffering. We say things like, oh, don't drink and go to meetings. It's going to be okay, you know. Or your worst day sober is going to be better than your best day drunk. Your worst day sober is going to be better than your best day drunk. Please, you know, give me a break. You know what I mean? You're going to find no matter how bad it is, you're going to say, I'm broke. I don't have a relationship. I don't have a car. I'm living down the street. This is so much better than when I used to be drinking. You know what I mean? It's, oh, yeah, you're going to, you know. But you say, we say stuff like that. You know, maybe they'll believe it. Who knows? You know, and they, you know, but here's the truth. But after you get a while in here, and you've been here a while, and you've suffered some of the pains and stuff, you start realizing that suffering and going through trials has something to do with this stuff. Right? So, but it's all good. It's all good. You just hang in there, and it'll work out. You know, it just takes time. That's all. So God bless you, and I'll speak to you again next week.
Thanks, Russell. At this time, I'm going to bring up our secretary, Samantha.
Hi, my name is Samantha. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Megan to read the recovered statement, so she's coming up here. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what exactly it means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, my name is Megan. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured? That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now seeing where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you. From Ford to Second Edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed, over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of the recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor at the moment? Can you please stand so that we can get to know you and get you connected to someone that can help take you through the steps and bring you closer to God? All right, everyone has a sponsor. Awesome. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts promptly at 7:15 p.m. If you should require a big book of your own, we have large print editions for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Thank you, Samantha. And just before we close, I want to let everybody know that all of our meetings that we have here, Russell, the sessions he's done the last 5 or 6 weeks now, they're all on alcoholicsandgod.org, and you can go check all of that out, kind of catch up. Also, I want to invite everyone, like Samantha said, to our Big Book Study on Monday night. That's at Monday, 7:15 in the room next door. That's a Big Book Study. We take people through the book, and then on Thursday nights we come here and get experience on how that's worked out for them. Before we close with the Lord's Prayer, can everybody one more time please help us thank Russell? And we'll just have another moment of silence and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you, everyone.
offered me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try. Loving you, I become a much stronger man.
She's wandered, and the shame she can't hide. She says, how did I get here? I'm not who I once was, and I'm crippled by the fear that I've fallen too far to love. But don't you know who you are? What has been done for you? Don't you know who you are? You are more than the choices that you've made. You are more than the sun, the past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. Well, she tries to believe it, that she's been given new life. But she can't shake the feeling that it's not true tonight. She knows all the answers, and she's rehearsed all the lines. And so she'll try to do better, but then she's too weak to try. But don't you know who you are? You are more than some of the past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. You are more than the choices that you make. You are more than some of the past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've
some of your past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. You are more than the choices that you make. You are more than some of your past mistakes. You are more than the problems you create. You've been remade. 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 Wow.
Well, here I go, playing a fool again, trying to pretend you will not get to me. But I know how hard I try to make my compromise, wish to have it go back to me. And I know. Thank you.